It's McCowan. It's Shannon on the Bob McCowan podcast. And we are heard also on Sirius XM 167, for those of you so inclined. The story's been out there for over a week, isn't it, John?
Well, the story's been out there for a long time, Bob, and the NHL, once they found out about it, and the Blackhawks announced an independent investigation, which the results came out on Tuesday, of what went on with the sexual abuse in 2010 during the Stanley Cup playoffs. The story has not gone away. It has grown. We have now learned the name of, in the document, John Doe number one, a Blackhawk, Black Ace, named Kyle Beach, who was a first round pick of the Blackhawks 13 years ago, I think. Beach went public last night on TSN with Rick Westhead to talk about it and to discuss what his life has been like, and it's been torturous. And also he implicated more people, Bob. He implicated more people, not only the Blackhawks, not only the players, not only the coaches, but he implicated the Players Association too. It's not going away. It needs to be talked about. And that's why we're doing what we're doing today.
Alan Walsh, player agent, who has been with us several times before, will join us today to discuss this situation in some depth. Excuse me. It is noteworthy, perhaps, to say that Kyle Beach, I do not believe, played a game for the Chicago Blackhawks, was in fact called up.
Correct.
During the playoffs that year. When this incident occurred, and did not wind up playing for them. Went to Europe, did he not, John?
Well, the only time Beach played and put on a Blackhawk sweater was in some preseason games. This guy came out of junior hockey with big potential. Now you have to wonder what impact all of this has had on his life and his playing career. Yes, he's playing in Germany right now. He seems to have found a niche in his life that he's happy with. But the interview last night, Bob, was wrenching about when he told his parents and how they felt responsible. This guy's a brave man. He's a brave man to go through it and discuss it. I only hope that... I hope we all learn. I hope hockey learns from what this horrible incident has done. So
it raises the question, too, about whether he was prohibited from playing in the National Hockey League. And I'm only asking the question, not making any suggestions. Yeah. But he was number 11, I believe, overall in the draft.
Yeah.
And as you said, had lots of potential, and one wonders.
Well, and there were times
they prevent him from.
Well, and there were times that through ignorance, that there were articles written. What's wrong with Kyle Beach? Why isn't Kyle Beach reaching his potential? And the people that wrote those articles certainly never knew what was going on. And that's the sad and sillery part of this event. It really is.
We'll spend some time today talking about this quite tragic happenstance from 11 years ago that has now just come to light. Alan Walsh, player agent, will join us next when we continue after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon with you on the podcast and on Sirius XM. The story now has a name of the abused in the Chicago Blackhawks scandal. Kyle Beach is his name. He's a former number one draft choice. He was the 11th player picked in the draft. He is still playing, albeit in Europe, has been for several years. Mm-hmm. Did not really get an opportunity with Chicago Blackhawks, to the surprise of many. And we can sit here and speculate as to whether there is any relation, correlation between the opportunity or lack of an opportunity that he got or didn't get, and what happened to him behind closed doors. But that would be mere speculation on our part. Player agent Alan Walsh joins us to talk about this. We see these stories still rarely, but at the time that this incident happened, we saw almost none of this become public. There was the odd situation, the odd individual who came forward. But as an agent, I'm wondering, with your relationship with players, have you ever had one of your players confess to you that something untoward had happened to them?
First of all, Bob and John, thank you for having me. I have had players confide in me over my 26 years in the business on a lot of different topics. Some issues relating to their childhood, some issues relating to their participation in minor hockey, some issues related to their own mental health, whether it's depression or anxiety, family members' mental health, issues of potential drug abuse, alcoholism, society problems. Mm-hmm. And players are not immune in any way, shape, or form. You know, so many people put them up on pedestals, but behind the scenes, there are the same problems you find in society, you find with players. And yes, many players have confided in me about those topics over the years. I've never had a player confide in me something similar to what Kyle Beach has come out and spoken out about.
It's important to state as well, and you'll disagree with me if this is inaccurate, but player agents over the course of an extended tenure with an individual player probably become their sounding board as much or more than their best friends, family members, whatever. Is that your experience?
Absolutely. I mean, that's my personal experience. I think I'm known for getting very close to the players that I represent. I've always presented who we are as an agency, as a family, with our players. And over the course of the journey, you know, there are players, you can take a player like Marc-Andre Fleury. I've been representing him and working with him, and I've known him since he was 15 years of age. You know, that's a 20 plus year relationship where we've grown up together. I was there when he played his first game in the NHL. I was sitting next to him when he got drafted number one overall in the NHL. I was at his wedding. I know his kids. He knows my kids. So yes, you get extremely close on the personal side, but you also are, just as you said, a sounding board, a career advisor, sometime armchair psychologist, contract negotiator, financial advisor. You wear a lot of different hats based on what's needed at that time, for sure.
Alan, with your knowledge of what goes on in and around a professional sports team, and the discussions that, you know, we've always said stay in the locker room or the dressing room, how does something like this take 11 years to be uncovered?
It's a great question. I've been asking myself that for a while now. How does something like this not come forward for 11 years? Remember, the Blackhawks' original position was they investigated this internally and there was no merit to any of the allegations. That was the original response. And what we know now, it's hard to believe that was the original response. But let's face it, take everybody back to 2010. It was a different time.
Do you think so? Even 11 years, just 11 years ago?
Yeah, there was I think that many things have happened in the NHL and in the United States and Canada over the 11 years, where all of these issues are it's much more acceptable to speak about them. The media is more willing to write about them. I mean, I asked myself this morning, would we be where we are today without the reporting of people like Rick Westhead? And without that reporting, would there have been a independent law firm hired to conduct a review? And would we have a report that was very detailed, made public for everybody to read? I don't know if we would. So I do think a lot has changed in society since 2010. Hockey culture has shifted and changed to some extent. I think it still has a long ways to go, but we're certainly further along than we were back in 2010.
I'm inclined to think that the belief system in on the part of an accuser, the public's general, I mean, the general public and people in the hockey business are more inclined now to raise an eyebrow and listen to the story and not summarily dismiss it as some fantasy, some sour grapes, some exaggeration. We did go through a long period of time in sport, didn't realize it at the time, but when the infrastructure protected itself from itself, from those inside. And any allegations that were made were immediately quieted, covered up. Were the Chicago Blackhawks guilty of that? The story is that the president of the team at the time agreed to take it upon himself to investigate the allegations and make some decisions. Decisions were made, but they waited until after the Stanley Cup final, until the Chicago Blackhawks had won the Stanley Cup. They then waited until the parade had taken place. They then put the accuser's name on the cup and allowed him to have the cup for a day. I mean, the endless string of inappropriate behavior is really quite extraordinary.
The dismissal of Brad Aldrich certainly did not match, and how he was dismissed did not match the events that he created. There's question about that.
They did not announce the reason for it, correct?
Correct. And one important point that I think needs to be made is the horrific events that occurred after he left Chicago.
Right.
And would those events have happened if the Blackhawks, if the people in positions of power had done something different?
Well, in fact, that's why most of this has come to light, is because of the lawsuit from the high school student athlete and his family to the Blackhawks, who have with their letterhead gave a letter of recommendation and commendation to Brad Aldrich to be involved in high school sports in Michigan. That's really, and those papers, because they were in court, became public domain.
100%. And I think very much these are all systemic issues. And clearly the policies and the positions and the way that we all approach these issues has to change. And I think in some extent, they're changing under our feet as we speak, which is a good thing. But I also think everyone needs to see and understand and process the ramifications of what was done in 2010, or more specifically, what was not done, and how that has affected people's lives thereafter.
Anytime a story of this nature has come up, and there have been a few occasions where it's been highly public, we wonder whether the predators involved systemically, deliberately seek to be involved in sport, and in this case, hockey, because they feel as if they will be believed if ever confronted, that the system, the infrastructure will protect them. Do you subscribe to that theory?
You know, I read the report a couple of times through and through, and you're aware that I spent 5 years as a prosecutor, mm-hmm. and I prosecuted crimes. I focused more on murder cases, but I saw a lot of sex offenses being prosecuted. I sat in courtrooms where people testified to horrific things. And one pattern that I saw back then was usually the predator is in a position of power over the victim in some way. And clearly, the allegations here are horrific. And put yourself in Kyle Beach's shoes. A first round pick. He's a young guy. He's just out of junior. He's a black ace. He's trying to impress everybody. He's trying to make it to the NHL. And this video coach is telling him, I have the head coach's ear. They are listening to me. I can make or break your career right here, right now. I can get you onto the roster and into the NHL, or I can destroy you. Can anybody be in more of a position of power than that? And I think that fact is a fact that controls the entire set of circumstances we have to consider it under.
So that, and Bob and I touched on this before you joined us, is you now have to wonder, did Kyle Beach get a chance to play for the Chicago Blackhawks? Did he really get a chance? And I'm not sure we'll ever get an honest answer. Do you?
No, I don't think we'll ever get an honest answer. I think if you put the knowledge of what we know now and what we know people in management and the coaching staff knew or should have known, I think that to say today it had no impact on his ability to make the Chicago Blackhawks and thrive there, I don't know if we'll ever know.
How wide-ranging could this ultimately become? There were numerous people involved with the Chicago Blackhawks at that time. Well, the now former general manager has resigned.
Right.
There are others that are being investigated. And
well, Joel Quenneville is meeting today, Bob, with Gary Bettman.
Yes.
We won't have the result of that meeting today. Gary Bettman is meeting with Kevin Cheveldayoff, the general manager of Winnipeg, who was in the original meeting. He's meeting with him on Monday. You wonder, and this is where you put your lawyer's hat on, Alan, is complicity enough of guilt in this scenario?
It's a great question, and I wish I can give you an answer on that. I honestly don't know. It's something that I'm also thinking about. I think we're all taken aback by the details in the report and what actually occurred. And I think we're all still processing it to some extent. Yes, there's outrage. Yes, what's portrayed in the report is horrific. But I think we're all really processing how this is going to impact the NHL going forward. We know it's going to have a tremendous impact. One thing I will say, though, there have been moments where players have come forward to share things that have happened in their personal life, their some challenges, whether it's drug addiction, alcoholism, depression, anxiety, that have had a profound impact on their lives and the lives of people around them. And each time professional athletes have come forward to speak their truth, it has, in many ways, removed the stigma attached to these issues. And I know that I've had people reach out to me who I don't know. I have to get this off my chest. I want to share with you my story of anxiety and depression. I want to share with you, I feel I want to share with you my story of alcoholism or Ambien abuse or drug abuse. And I wonder if this is going to lead to more players coming forward and speaking about things that may have happened to them in the past. That I wonder about. And if that happens, what that means.
We want to take a quick break. We'll come back with more. Player agent Alan Walsh was, as we discussed, the Kyle Beach story that has captivated people outside of the sports world. We'll do that when we come back after these messages. Alan Walsh is with us, player agent. And you mentioned earlier that you were you are a lawyer, and you were involved in criminal cases in the past. You were a prosecutor, correct?
Correct.
Should we expect criminal charges as a result of what we know, what we believe we will know within time, in your opinion?
Well, I did a quick check on that, and Illinois does not have a statute of limitations on sex crimes. I believe the Chicago police originally looked at the allegations, and it never went any further. I don't believe a case was ever prepared and presented to a prosecutor's office with a request to file charges. It's a great question. It's a very difficult case to prosecute in a court of law 11 years after an allegation of an offense. Memories fade. Witness recollections differ. And many people have said to me, well, you know, I read the report and they all remember things differently. But that's typical of every situation.
Of course.
I would have witnesses to a drive-by shooting giving almost contemporaneous statements to the police about what they saw. And there would be a wide variance, literally minutes after the shooting, of what each individual perceived occurred. So imagine putting that in the context of years later.
Should be noted. We've just gone through, you know, not so long ago, a doctor involved with the U.S. women's gymnastic teams was given essentially life in prison for the crimes that he committed. And the young ladies that were involved, it was years and years later that they made their statements and wound up getting him prosecuted. And I'm wondering whether, do we still feel, or does the court system still react the same way as it did in reference to what you talked about? that years pass, memories fade. It's tougher to, the longer you wait, the tougher it is to prosecute. Do you think that's still the case in situations such as this?
Sure.
It is.
Absolutely.
Huh?
Absolutely.
So there's been no real evolution.
The other thing to think about is when we look at other events like the Penn State Jerry Sandusky incident, in this scenario, there were multiple young people involved, as opposed to a single athlete involved.
Well, there were dozens in the women's gymnastics.
Well, no, that's what I mean. John, my point is the more complainants, the more realistic it is to get charges laid, Alan?
I, to be honest with you, I'm not as familiar with the process between the Chicago Police Department and state prosecutors in Illinois. I would just say that based on my experience, and my experience is, you know, 30 years ago, it would be a very difficult case to file and prosecute. Not insurmountable. Clearly, the fact that it's high profile will have some impact on the decision making as well. It always does, even if you wish it.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Right.
So, I think that if I'm a betting man right now, I would think that it's certainly going to get a second look by prosecutors and by the police to see whether there is a case to bring to court.
Well, and in fact, shouldn't, I mean, as part of, again, this is my personal opinion, when these allegations came to light and the Blackhawks and John McDonough were aware of them, shouldn't his first call have been to the police?
100%. I can tell you, if anybody had called me, I don't care who it is, and share something like that with me, I'm hanging up the phone and I'm calling the police.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
That has to be your first response.
Yeah. The other thing about the report, 139 witnesses testified in front of the law firm. 139 people are discussed, have their thoughts, but 37 declined to be interviewed. I think that's as concerning as anything for me out of the report, Alan. 37 people refused to be cooperative. That to me is very disturbing.
I think that if Gary Bettman was interested in a robust, full accounting of what occurred, he should have mandated that anybody working for an NHL team today, anybody connected to the NHL in any way, must cooperate with the investigators and sit for an interview if so requested.
Right.
And absent your constitutional right against self-incrimination, with that proviso, you must answer questions if so asked.
Yeah. The other aspect of what has been revealed in the last 24 hours with the Westhead Beach interview was Beach's belief that the Players Association let him down. You are a huge advocate for players. You have been on other issues like CTE. To me, you know, we've always pointed fingers at, you know, the teams and the league. But to see a player, a former, an active professional hockey player, point his finger at the Players Association, to me, was also very disturbing. What do you think of that?
I have long been an advocate of agents staying out of the NHLPA's internal business. It's the players' union, not the agents' union. And the agents' role is to support the union publicly in issues like collective bargaining, whatever that may be, whenever that may be. But I don't think it's the agent's role to get themselves directly involved in the internal workings of the NHLPA. The NHLPA executive director and the people working at the NHLPA answer to the 32 players on the NHLPA's executive board. And agents should stay completely out of that process.
But why would the Players Association, what justification would the Players Association have for not taking steps, at least, to investigate the situation at the time they were allegedly made aware of the situation? What would be their motive or agenda to not act?
It's a great question. It's a question that needs to be asked. And it's a question that I think should be answered, but it's for them to answer it. Yeah. It's not for me, because quite frankly, I have zero personal knowledge of what they knew, when they knew it, what they did, what they didn't do. So to sit here in judgment today without knowing really any of those facts, I think would be unfair of me. But I do think you're asking great questions that deserve to be answered.
Well, do you Don Fear put out a release last night suggesting that, quite frankly, I think he threw the doctors from the NHL, NHLPA program under the bus. Do you think that this has a huge implication on what the NHL and the Players Association have created with this program for players to find resolution in some of their issues?
I certainly hope not, because the program has literally saved players' lives. They do heroic work, and they've saved players' lives. They've saved the lives of family members. So many people behind the scenes have sought help from the doctors associated with the program, and there's been so much good done. I certainly hope there isn't a hesitation or reticence to reach out and ask for help amongst anybody, but especially NHL players and their family members or former players. And all I know is that in all my dealings with the people associated with the program at the NHLPA, I consider them all heroes, and there isn't a negative word that can ever be said about any of the people there.
That's a tough question that maybe is unfair, but do you have an opinion on, based on what we believe that Quenneville and Shevoldayoff knew at the time? Gary Bettman's going to talk to them about it. Should they face some sort of punishment from the National Hockey League, or were they bystanders essentially? And I'm saying this completely hypothetically, in that they may have been aware of the allegations, but the president of the team undertook to handle an investigation and make determinations as to the validity of the allegations.
I'm certainly not going to mount any defense of anything they did or didn't do right now, but I also don't feel it's appropriate to condemn them either. I think, just as you said, that's a decision for Gary Bettman to make. He's going to meet with both of them. I'm sure he's going to hear them out. I'm sure he's going to ask a lot of questions. And then he's going to have to take some sort of action, even if it's nothing. That is taking action. Refusing to take action. So that's his jurisdiction, and leave it to him to make that call.
A question of law. We all became familiar, and I confess I was probably not. We learned a lot about the law with the O.J. Simpson case. First the criminal case, and then subsequently the civil case. One of the things we learned is that there is a possibility that the two are separate, and there's a possibility if you lose a criminal case, you can still file a civil case and be successful, because the parameters for judgment are different in the two. Is there a civil case potentially here?
Well, there's an ongoing civil case, and I think there's a possibility that more people might be brought in as defendants.
That was my point.
Based on the facts that exist in the report. It was my thought in reading through the report that there's certainly the facts as presented by the investigators certainly would lead one to conclude there may be other potential claims that exist within this report by certain people to make.
Yeah. The other thing, Alan, is that when Rocky and Danny Wirtz made their public statement, to me, it was truly an admission of guilt. And the Blackhawks, again, put your lawyer's hat on. The Blackhawks basically said, listen, we are responsible. The Blackhawk organization is responsible for what happened. How does that, in your opinion, change the civil cases?
I would expect, I don't have any direct knowledge, but I would expect the focus between the parties would move towards settlement,
right,
and reaching a settlement. And I would expect to see a settlement sooner than later.
Yeah.
If after the investigations of Quenneville and Sheveldayoff produce the results that, quite frankly, I expect, and I think we all expect, that these two guys were at least probably formally, if not, but certainly informally, aware of what was going on. Suspensions seem to be the least of the punishments that could be given to them. And I'm not sure that there's a limit to how far Gary Bettman can or would go in this regard. Do you share that assessment?
I do. I think that there's really no limitation to what Gary Bettman can decide, whether it's suspension, whether it's expulsion. I think he can go as far as he wants to go.
Well, it's a tragedy that this happened, of course. It is a tragedy that we are left here once again to try and dissect and explain and understand the kinds of things that occasionally do go on.
Just so Alan, we're all on the same page. But in your opinion, as a guy who's involved with the players, understands how the NHL works better than all of us, how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? How do we sit here and should every team have an independent ombudsman? Should there be someone? I mean, there's a 1-800 number. I know the league is created for players, for whistleblowers, but how do we?
By the way, no one knows the number. I've talked to a bunch of players in the league, and I've said, "Hey, do you guys know about a 800 number?"
But there is supposed to be a number.
There is. 100% is. It's just the players that at least that I've talked to don't know it exists.
Well, but whose fault is that they don't know? I think that's both sides, to my frankly, the Players Association and the league. But how do we make sure there isn't another Kyle Beach?
I think number one, education. Number two, not just education of the players, but I think anybody working for an NHL team needs to go through some sort of specialized training with regards to sexual harassment, sexual assault, and have a agreed upon step-by-step approach on how it should be handled.
Yeah. Now, for the record, Alan, I was an employee of the National Hockey League for 5 years. I did have to take a diversity and a sensitivity training to be hired. It wasn't difficult, but you were certainly made aware of what was inappropriate and appropriate and could be acceptable. And the other question is how do we ensure there isn't another Brad Aldrich?
Yeah, but my question to you, John, would be this before I answer your question. You were made aware through diversity training, sexual harassment training on what's appropriate and what's not appropriate? Were you given a step-by-step guide of what to do, A, if something happened to you, or B, if somebody came to you to make you aware that somebody working under you or somebody working around you was the subject or victim of some sort of untoward act?
As I recall, and it was a while ago, part of the process was to say, yes, here's the step-by-step process. If you or one of your direct reports has an issue, and who to contact. Yes. But strictly, it was all strictly internal. There was no external, please phone the police. It was all internal discussion.
Right. I think, how do we avoid another Brad Aldrich? Well, I think there should be and needs to be a vigorous background check to anybody being employed by an NHL team. I think those background checks have gotten much more vigorous over the last 10, 11 years than they may have been in 2010. But I think people need to come in, and anybody coming into the game that we love needs to be vetted. And I think people need to be made aware of concerning behavior and what that might mean, and know specifically what to do when they see it or when they hear about it.
You're not going to eliminate predators. That is the reality. What you can do, and this case is a prime example, it took 11 years for this to become public, and no one is blaming Kyle Beach, because we cannot even imagine the stress, anxiety, whatever, that he's gone through.
Life-changing.
Of course. This is common. This is not abnormal behavior for someone who went through what he's gone through. We've seen this over and over and over again in society. And the braveness that it takes to go public. And then again, with the gymnasts, you know, it started with one and it wound up with, I don't even remember how many, 100. There were dozens of witnesses at the trial, or at the sentencing, mm-hmm. of that predator. I mean, therein lies what we're looking at, I believe, is we need to find a way. We can't keep the predators out. We can do the best we can. But I would think, Alan, that most of those who commit crimes, especially of this nature, do not believe they will ever be caught. Do not really fear the risk of being caught and the ramifications of being caught. They believe that they can do what they want, and they have the power to prevent the person that they're acting upon. They have the ability to intimidate them to the point where they won't say anything. And there's plenty of evidence to support that. Historically, right?
And in the report itself, Aldrich is quoted several times as saying to Kyle Beach, you better not tell anybody what happened. Mm-hmm. Several times. So there you go.
We've lost John's microphone, but we do want to let you go.
Can the players police something like this?
I think the players have a role, and I think the Players Association has a role, but I think everybody has to get together and figure out what best practices and policies should be going forward, and I think they will.
These kinds of conversations are always sensitive and difficult to discuss, but we thank you very much for your honesty, sincerity, and willingness to join us to talk about it. We thank you, and we look forward to chatting with you about more amicable, more friendly things down the road. Thank you, Alan, very much.
You got it. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, John.
Alan Walsh, player agent. We'll come back and wrap it after these messages. And we are back. Our thanks again to sincerely to Alan Walsh, player agent, who has been on this program on several occasions.
We put Alan in a tough spot, Bob.
We did. Because we're most appreciative that he agreed to join us.
Yeah. He's an advocate for players. And that's why it made sense to have someone who is an advocate for players on, who, and also has a little bit of understanding of the legal world of what is happening.
Well, I think that's important. It's important for people to understand that this is not all player agents are lawyers.
No.
But many are. But there aren't many who have been in the position that Alan was in before he got into being a player agent.
Well, he was on the OJ trial group. He was there. So.
And he, as a prosecutor.
Right.
So he has a unique perspective of the law and what can and cannot be done. And we thank him sincerely. It seems perhaps frivolous to take this serious conversation and morph into what happened in sports last night.
It was rather passive of me to watch last night because the interview that was on TSN really affected me. Whether it's as a parent, whether it's somebody who has earned his living, and I have earned my living in and around the National Hockey League, I'm embarrassed. I was running Hockey Night in Canada when Sheldon Kennedy's story came out, and we tried to be as open and journalistic as possible in covering Sheldon's issues over it wasn't a one-time event. It was more than once. And these things are difficult in the world of sports. It really is, because it's, you know, when real life and sports intersect, there's a lot of people that don't know how to handle it. And the blessing that, some journalists, Katie Strang at The Athletic, Rick Westhead, a few others, how they managed this was certainly the right way to go.
Well, is it inconceivable that the National Hockey League at the time was told about this allegation? I mean, it went to McDonough, who was the president of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Did it go to ownership of the Blackhawks?
Well, according to Rocky Wirtz, it did not.
Yeah, he says
and
that.
He was the owner. Yeah,
well, he takes responsibility.
Because it's his company.
I get it. I understand it. And that may be, my apologies, that may be a legitimate situation. However, is it inconceivable that the National Hockey League was aware of it? Was made aware of the situation back in 2010 or shortly thereafter?
I find it hard to believe that they would know. You know, in that circle of what the Stanley Cup final is all about, and the focus of what the Stanley, having been involved in it many times, is that you have little non-hockey discussion with the clubs. But you know what? Is it possible, Bob? Anything's possible.
Well, I'm trying to think of what I would have done if I was McDonough at the time.
Well, what should have happened at the time was that Brad Alderich should have been suspended.
Oh, we get immediately. That's a given. But if I'm in the president of Chicago Blackhawks and I'm confronted with this scenario, one that I'm presuming he has never addressed previously, would I, in his position, consult with those above me? would I go to the ownership of the team, or would I go to somebody in the league and say, okay, here's what's happened here. Yeah. How do I handle this? Then you got to put yourself in the context of it's 11 years ago, and attitudes towards this kind of thing were different. Yeah. But we do know this: corporations, companies, whether they're involved in sports or otherwise,
cover up.
Are always going to cover up.
Yeah.
Are always going to be inclined to not address it. I think that's a reality, is it not?
I think it has to be something that has to be discussed and is certainly concerned. Yeah, no question.
I suspect that we have not heard, I know we have not heard the last of this. And
no.
We probably will spend some more time down the road discussing it. It will certainly be intriguing to see what the results are from the two interviews that are scheduled for today and on Monday with Mr. Quenneville and Cheveldayoff. Again, our thanks to Alan Walsh for joining us on the program. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, back tomorrow. Until then, goodbye, everybody.